Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Iconic summer moments deserve an iconic drink. Reach for Mountain Dew, an American original. From its beginnings in the foothills of Tennessee to your biggest summer yet, the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew is the perfect companion to your American summer adventures. Enjoy the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew, tasting great since 48. Look for Mountain Dew in stores near you at MountainDew.com. That's MountainDew.com.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
You cannot pass!
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 45. Five away from 50. The countdown continues. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, the Triple Vodka Trill, and Ken Jack. It's an oceans week. Not talking about, like, real oceans. Talking about Danny Ocean, Debbie Ocean. It was Debbie, right?
I think.
Yeah.
Yep. No James Cameron today.
No James Cameron talk today. But yeah, Ocean's 8 review, we're going to build our own heist team and do some old regular news. But anything before we get into it, folks?
Yeah, I thought you said 45 on the intro.
I did.
And I am looking at the podcast list, and our last episode was 54.
It's a real dumps, dude.
No.
We should definitely be over 50, because we said hit our...
Can you see it? LCB 54.
Did I fuck that up?
Yeah, we're definitely past 50, because remember we said that? We said we're like halfway to 100 at some point recently.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, episode 55.
Ooh.
Yeah.
How about that?
Troll 60.
Troll just owned you.
My blacklist name, The Auditor.
The podcast boy.
Cool. Okay, so that's the housekeeping.
Well, technically, you don't count the... Real dump episodes is canon.
They really aren't,
really
though.
Not to 50.
They're not canon. They're not. Anything else? Anything we got to mention? Follow us. Twitter, at Lights Camera Pod. Instagram, at Lights Camera Barstool. Our Reddit. Go to our Reddit. We love Reddit. It's a fun place to interact.
And that's the show.
And that's
thanks
it.
For listening.
Yeah. That's been the show. News. Jeremy Renner. Just a fucking slew of Jeremy Renner news. So much Jeremy Renner. It's not even like a joke. There's literally three stories. First up, Hawkeye solo film. Yay or nay?
Nay.
Saying it's going to happen. I don't know.
Oh, I don't care. I'll watch it if they make one. I don't have a strong opinion. I don't love Hawkeye.
Middleman.
Well,
trill.
Wait a second. Linda Cardellini would definitely be in this one.
Ooh. That actually.
I mean, I don't know. Could Hawkeye carry a movie? I don't know if he could. He's easily one of the most boring parts of the Avengers.
Well, would it be an origin story? Would it be like a continuing? Is the question.
What's Hawkeye's origin?
I don't fucking know. Like how he learns how to shoot a
maybe
bow and arrow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be in for an origin story, I think, maybe. Not a continuation because of the universe building. Like at that stage, we know there's people with powers that could just fucking kill him very quickly.
It's him every summer at YMCA summer camp firing a bow and arrow until he gets really good.
Getting his bow and arrow badge at like Boy Scout camp or something. It would just be, actually, that wouldn't be good. The more I'm talking myself out of this, I think.
Also on the Jeremy Renner list in the category of superheroes, apparently the Infinity War creators, not just the directors like Marvel itself, got death threats over Hawkeye. Not being in the movie? Jesus. That's fucking intense. Imagine if it had been like Captain America's not in the movie. Like he's off hiding for this one. Hawkeye, like death threats? The parallels on that just don't seem to line up. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, let's just go out on a limb here and say death threats in general are very bad.
Yeah.
But
we're an anti-death threat pod.
Yeah, but death threats specific to what happens or what does not happen in a movie is ridiculous. So even if it was a character like Captain America who wasn't in it, maybe you're a Hawkeye fan, but nothing warrants being that mad over Hawkeye being left out of the movie.
The Russo brothers are just like, it's weird how all these death threats are written in the same shades from the same big four color pen addressed to Jeremy Renner.
It's just another example of how you cannot please everything. They made Avengers Infinity War, which was positively received by almost everybody, and there's a small contingent of folks out there who wanted Hawkeye in the movie so bad they got so mad they decided to do that. So it's upsetting, but Hawkeye, I mean, they'll get their solo movie, it sounds like, so chill out.
He's in the next one. Fucking relax. Yeah. Infinity War, though, crossed $2 billion today, which is Tuesday, June 12th. What are we looking at here? June 12th. Yeah, and a fourth ever movie to hit $2 billion, tied for the fastest to $2 billion, 47 days. First ever. Actually, it hit yesterday. I take that back. June 11th. That's how it tied for the fastest. First ever $2 billion movie that wasn't released in December, which is wild. 68 million away from Star Wars The Force Awakens, 187 million away from Titanic. I'm pretty confident this would have easily been the second highest grossing movie of all time had it been released in December. And it might have had a shot at Avatar. Maybe. But it for sure would have, it would have toppled Titanic. So the fact that it did it when it was released, wild.
When's Avengers 4 going to come out? Is it going to come out in summer?
Same time frame.
Yeah.
Only $700 million to go to beat Avatar.
Fucking ridiculous.
I'm rooting for this small indie film that somehow has crossed $2 billion.
The indie film that could. Last but not least, Jeremy Renner commented on the fact that his arms in the movie tag are all CGI. He broke his arms on one of the first few days of filming, and his arms are all CGI. And this is pretty funny because like they CGI'd his arms. And if it's good, people are going to be like, that's a funny movie. Like, what a job. Yet the movie was poor, and I mean that. And by movie, I mean Justice League with the mustache. Like most people didn't like it. We all, for the most part, enjoyed it. But most people didn't like it, and people destroyed that movie for a CGI mustache. The CGI body parts and hair is just, it's becoming crazy. It's a phenomenon.
I don't know if you could do CGI well enough to fully make it realistic looking, like movement of human arms. So it'll be interesting to see how it looks. Maybe they'll work their movie magic. I do say it has to make you feel good if you're Jeremy Renner to have that happen to you in the first couple of days of shooting and they don't replace you on the movie. Mm. That's when you know you made it as a star. Like, they need me in this movie. They've already paid me.
That's a good point. I think it's probably easier to CGI arms just because you can mocap it. You can't really mocap a mustache off, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, maybe not. Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know if you'll get that uncanny valley looking feel to CGI like spaghetti arms waving around, like one of those inflatable things in front of car dealers.
Yeah.
But also, you know, they camera tricks and whatnot. And he's the character who doesn't have to tag people in this movie, I guess.
It's true.
So, you know, at least that didn't go. But yeah. I didn't know that happened to him, man.
Both arms.
Hope he's okay. Like, that's serious. Like, both arms at the same time.
And it says he underwent.
Probably recovered by now. But no. Sorry.
Sorry. Bad chemistry, folks. No, he was undergoing physical therapy because he was also working on Avengers 4 at the same time. That is really bad timing. And it's also a comedy movie, so who really gives a shit? As long as the movie's funny. I don't care if the arms look CGI. It's actually kind of funny. That actually kind of adds to the humor.
No, I don't care if they're CGI. It just will be interesting to see if you can tell or not. Because I couldn't tell on watching Justice League when I was in the theater, but then all the screenshots came out and I'm like, I don't know why I didn't pick up on that.
Next up, Hereditary. Kenjack and I both saw Hereditary. I gave it a 90. Kenjack gave it a 79. Hereditary, apparently they cut 1.5 hours from the film. This is not really a discussion for myself and Kenjack. If you want to read the review, you got to give us some clicks. It's up on our landing page on BarstoolSports.com. Read our review. Trill, what are your expectations now for this movie, considering Kenjack really didn't love it? Thought it was good, didn't love it, and I liked it a fair amount. What are you thinking here? You going to go see Hereditary?
Yeah, I'm going to get to Hereditary eventually. I'll probably be closer to you, Jeff, just because I think we're bigger fans of the horror genre than Mr. Kenjack is. Kenjack just doesn't like horror films.
No, I do. I just like good ones, and it wasn't a good one.
Well, the interesting thing about this one is it's another example of a huge divide between a critic score and audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's like a 40 right now in audience score or something like that.
Yeah. So, most of the feedback I heard is that people thought it was great. So it'll be, I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, it's weird. I had posted about it after I saw it, and I got the weirdest, like, most bipolar split reactions, either because I said, like, I thought it was just, like, not what I thought it was going to be, and I was getting responses either like, yeah, I didn't understand the hype at all, or people who were like, wow, you're crazy, it was the best movie I've ever seen in horror genre, and, like, there's no in-between. There's no people who are like, yeah, it was just okay.
Screen Rant said they cut, what'd they say they cut out of it?
1.5 hours.
Again? Isn't that pretty normal, though? Like, isn't that every
movie?
It's
not that crazy. It really isn't.
Yeah.
How much did they cut from Blade Runner?
Blade Runner, they cut a lot. Blade Runner was very fucking long. There was something else that was absurdly long, maybe from Spielberg. I forget who it was. Somebody was a crazy long cut. Oh, it was...
Post?
No, Scorsese with, like, Wolf of Wall Street was like 6 hours initially. It's like, get the fuck out of here with that shit.
Oh, man.
Ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Even, like, The Watchmen, I think, had a 4-hour cut they actually released on DVD. I mean, all these movies, they film a bunch of stuff and they trim it down. So I didn't think it was that unusual they cut it out of the movie. It just was never intended to be a 4-hour movie to begin with, or 3.5.
Yeah. And one shout out to @ThugBeast21 on Twitter, follower of ours. He predicted I'd give it an 89 and Kenjek give it a 61. He was off on Kenjek, but like the same
sentiment. A pretty fair amount, though, with sentiment-wise, yes.
Yeah, the sentiment was there, so I got to give him credit. I told him I'd give him credit. He was off by one on me, too. He said 85 for Trill, so don't let that influence your score. But
I think I'll like it. I tend to like movies like that. It looked creepy as shit in the previews.
It is. It's really fucked up.
It's really creepy.
Here's if you laugh during it, I want to hear about it. I want to hear if you laugh during it, because I laughed a lot during it.
Yeah, you great audience member.
No, that I wasn't guy. The only one. The whole theater. Okay, we'll talk about it later at some point. But the whole theater was laughing.
MoviePass. Another MoviePass story. We did this a few weeks ago for the first time. This one's really interesting. MoviePass may be adding a bring a friend option, a plus one option, which is, I mean, that's kind of crazy. Maybe it's like they're talking about a family plan. Is this going to help them, you think? Or, I mean, I don't really know how this works. I don't know.
Help them in terms of adding subscribers, maybe with the family plan, but not helping them in terms of making money. If they're losing money right now with the normal one person plan, I can't imagine saying you can now bring a friend. I read the article. It said it was still the same price. And we've talked about it before. They've admitted they're not making money, so it's no secret that from a revenue standpoint, this seems very odd. Maybe they'll get to a point where they have enough personal data to make money. I don't know.
It'd be funny if like you go to see a movie and they're like, yeah, you already saw this, and it's because your ex-girlfriend who had your account already saw it with her new man. That would be classic Netflix family subscriber joke, if you guys didn't get that reference.
I didn't find that joke to be all that funny.
I might be the only one that went through this scenario, but I apologize, and we'll track that joke in post.
Yeah, I don't really know how this helps. I mean, I guess they get new subscribers, but I mean, from my understanding of the model, they're still losing money if people don't use it. I mean, I guess they're just, it's like another shot. They're like, all right, let's try again. Can we get more subscribers who won't use it, or are they all going to use it like it's already happening? It's just crazy. I don't know. I hope they stick around. They're a great service, and they bring people to the theaters, despite what these theater companies say. Because when Kenjack and I go, people are swiping that MoviePass card left and right. So I hope this keeps them around. Maybe people will sign up and then not use it, because I think that's what's going to help them, you know, stay alive. So one more story here before we move on. This is like an Onion headline, right? This one, Kenjack mentioned this the other day. I was like, what? Isaiah Mustafa, who you may or may not know his name, and if you don't, you do know his face. It is the gentleman from the Old Spice commercials. Like, you know, the ones where he's like, you're looking at this, then you're looking at this, but now you're looking at this, and he's like a horse or some shit. Like, now I'm on a horse, talking to you about Old Spice. Well, he is the adult Mike in It Chapter 2. That's wild. I mean, going from an Old Spice commercial, and I think he was like a football player or something before that.
I don't even know.
He had some background. He's like an actor or something. But from an Old Spice commercial all the way up to being in one of the highest grossing horror movies of all time, and it'll be probably one of the highest grossing horror sequels of all time. I mean, that's quite the glow up job wise. That's like Flo from Progressive, though she's worth a shitload of money. Did you know that?
Yeah, yeah, big time.
Flo is worth a lot of money, but that's like Flo in Infinity War. It's like her playing like Thanos' like sidekick in Infinity War Part 2. So I was surprised by this. This is a wild story.
He was on a Freeform TV show called Shadowhunters.
Was it good?
Just got canceled.
I never watched it, but I'm going to go watch clips to see what his chops are like in that. I mean, I imagine he's pretty good if he got cast. They watched the tape. So I'm excited by it. I like when they take chances on, folks that maybe haven't had as much exposure in the past. But compared to having Jessica Chastain as your lead in like one of the group or what is it, the Losers Club?
Yeah.
It's a much different casting decision. But I don't dislike it. I think it'll be interesting.
I just looked up Stephanie Courtney, who plays Flo, and she's worth in the double digits $1 million. Fucking secure that bag. That is
Jesus.
How long has she been playing Flo?
Like, she's been like 5-6 years?
Oh, I think it's more than that, right?
10?
Not that long?
Damn.
I feel like 10 years.
10 years?
Like
yeah.
Damn. That's
more awesome. Than 100 commercials in 10 years.
This actually reminded me when I was thinking about this whole story in general. Who else would you want from commercials to be in movies? So, like, the Flo person, I remember Flo was in a movie. I think it was, like, We Are the Millers or something I remember seeing her in. Would you want the Dos Equis guy to be in a movie? The older one, not the new one?
No.
What about Justin Long and the fleshy PC guy?
What about the Verizon, the new Verizon guy?
Yeah, he'd be good in, like, a TV show about, you know, like a tech company.
What about the other Verizon guy?
Oh, Paul from Verizon?
Yeah.
He's the Sprint guy now.
Yeah. Such a betrayal.
Yeah.
Papa John.
Oh, I would like a Papa John in a movie. Isn't he a piece of shit, though? And then that why he got pushed out?
Just plays a drunk at a bar.
I don't know. I don't know. You see what Progressive's doing, though? They have a person they're trying to, I think, take over for Flo. Ooh. Jamie?
What?
No, I didn't see that. You seen the Big Jim? Big Jim's got you covered.
No,
I don't know. They got a whole cast of those Progressive folks with the smocks.
Classic commercial talk. We always kind of roll into the same thing week after week, and then it kind of dies off after 2 weeks.
It's weird because some weeks, like last week, we'll have tons of great trailer releases and news, and this week, it's just like the news isn't as hard hitting and interesting. I feel like.
Yeah. No, it's not really.
So don't blame us for this segment. Blame the news.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Exactly. Do we want to do our running bit where we talk about Reddits? Do we want to search for an old kind of Reddit quickly?
Ooh. Yeah, let's go to the Mentalist Reddit. The Mentalist Reddit, another USA show.
I think we should let it breathe a bit. I think we should let it breathe and only do it on the Sunday podcasts.
I'm still going to the Reddit to check it out. Just not going to talk about it, but I'm going to look at
it. Maybe get some intel. I kind of felt bad, though, because there was a thread posted on that Reddit, and some people liked the bit, and some people didn't appreciate us trashing the blacklist. Somebody was like, I'd like them to expand more on why the blacklist is like a weird show to be a fan of. And I'd like to expand on that, because it was good for like a season and two seasons, maybe, and then it's just not good anymore.
Mm.
There is a Reddit called Find a Reddit, and there was a post the other day. It said a growers not showers sub, almost what? Like progress pics, but side by side pictures of a penis soft then hard.
Ooh, joking progress boards. I'd take a look at them.
Charles got an exasperated look on his face, like he doesn't want to touch on this one.
I don't know, man. It hits too close to home.
Oh boy. All right, that's been news and commercial talk. Ocean's 8 review. When we come back on the other side of this break here on Lights, Camera, Barstool. Roll up in the club. All
eyes on me. Hey everyone, Bill the Sports Guy here with another episode of The Unwatchables. This week, I have this guy from the movies, Michael Caine.
Where am I? This isn't my attic.
Welcome to The Unwatchables, Michael. Can I call you Mikey?
No, I am Sir Michael Caine.
Well, I used to call Michael Sweetney Mikey. So weird. He was on the Boston Celtics. Did you know that?
Can I please go home?
All right, so today we're going to talk about The Dark Knight. Do you think the real Batman would have Polly's robot from Rocky IV in the Batcave? I just can't get over it.
Who is Rocky, and why did they seem to put him in the movies 4 times?
All right, well, whether you've seen it or not, I'm sure you can answer this. Do you think Ivan Drago could beat Bane in a fight?
Well, you see, sometimes a man has to be more than just muscles. And you see, in Bane, he had the brains. And Ivan Drago, I mean, I don't know who this man is. But I'll tell you this, steroids do work. And they are phenomenal.
All right, well, that's the Unwatchables. It's not over yet. What do you think so far? All right, Mikey, well, tell me this. If billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne owned the Gotham Rogues, do you think he should pay for his own fucking sports stadiums?
If you can make a poor man pay for what your meal ends up being, it's probably a good day. That's what Thomas Wayne taught me.
Well, let's get into the nitty-gritty of this interview. Which Batman character does Larry Bird remind you of most? Has to be Batman, right?
Well, who was that man that used to be the commissioner? He was, David Stern, and he was a very stern man. It reminds me of the Penguin, but he's a little bit more of the Joker.
Well, as you know, or I'm sure you've learned, I emphasize with Bruce Wayne a lot because my dad is dead too.
Oh, well, I'm very sorry to hear that, young
man. Well, to me. He's dead to me. Never showed up to my Weeblos graduation.
Well, you see, sometimes a dad hates his son, and he rejects him. I saw this when I played the role of Alfred in Batman because, as we know, Thomas Wayne thought Bruce was an absolute failure. As a 6-year-old.
Alright, we're almost wrapping up here, but not quite. First, I want to know, Teen Wolf starting 5 versus the New Kids on the Block. What's the spread on that?
Well, the Teen Wolf, he's the man with the giant cock, yeah? Well, him, I think the New Kids on the Block is, some people say, my cocaine, in order to say Michael Caine. And I think New Kids on the Block have said my name many, many times.
You know, and that's what's so weird, because people forget you see Teen Wolf's dick at the end of the movie. He was sort of LeBron James before LeBron James was LeBron James. So, Michael, tell us, what inspired you to act?
Well, it was back in Juilliard School. I was looking
to... And that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining me, Mikey Caine. And tune in next week for The Unwatchables, Episode 2. All right. Call me Dad.
All right, we're back. Lights, camera, barstool. Jeff Lowe, Trell Ballins, the Triple Vodka Trill, and Ken Jack. Talking Ocean's 8, the 4th Ocean's movie. Well, technically the 5th. The original was kind of a piece of shit that we really shouldn't touch on. A little problematic, too. But in terms of the recent Steven Soderbergh movies, because his name is technically on this movie, but he really didn't have that much involvement from what people can tell. Ocean's 8, a massive cast. Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Mindy Kaling. I mean, the list continues to grow as if they're still casting people. It goes on and on. Anne Hathaway's in it. Helena Bonham Carter's in it. Sarah Paulson, Awkwafina, Dakota Fanning, James Corden. A lot of people. This is going to be a non-spoiler section here. Ocean's 8. It is a continuation of the Ocean story, past Ocean's 13, though many years down the road. Sandra Bullock plays Debbie Ocean, sister of Danny Ocean, who, in the trailers, you see this is not a spoiler, is presumed dead. He's got a grave, tombstone, and she's just getting out of jail, and she wants to rob the Met Gala. I gave this movie a 69 out of 100, and it is not awful by any stretch of the imagination. It's not an awful movie. We've seen awful movies. This is not an awful movie. It has fun moments. It's not hard to get through. It just isn't great. And it has plenty of flaws. And not even, actually, I take that back. Not even plenty of flaws. It just has a few major flaws. Major structural issues. We'll get more into it in spoilers. I like the cast. Script stunk. And a bad script looks even worse when a good group of actors and actresses puts out a good performance. Because then it makes the script look even worse, like it handcuffed them even more than it could have. So 69 out of 100 for me. Trill Ballins, you watched it today, I believe. You went and saw it. What'd you give it?
I gave it a 70 out of 100. I liked it a lot. It was quick to get through. It felt like it went by in a breeze, which is always what you want out of a fun summer movie. I don't think there was like a glaring issue I had with this movie from a technical standpoint. I I didn't really find a big issue with the script, like you were saying, and maybe you can point out some things that are more specific to get me on your side. What it felt like to me is it felt like three runners on base with zero outs, and you come away with only like one run. So it was still like a positive thing, but it wasn't big enough. And maybe this is for the spoiler section, but something I always want out of a heist movie is I want to see a lot of cash. I want to see big garbage bags full of cash. I want to see a bunch of stuff being carried away. And what they end up with the jewel heist is you don't get that much stuff. It just doesn't feel like the scale was large enough. That relates into it not having a payoff that I think was deserving of an Ocean's movie. But other than that, it was good. I would go see it. If you have the chance to go see it in a theater, I'd definitely go catch it.
I gave it a 68 out of 100. It was just disappointing and frustrating, I would say. Definitely not a terrible movie by any stretch of the imagination, like Jeff was saying. It's just you expect more, I think, from an Ocean's movie, especially just with how good Ocean's 11 is and how, like, at least at the very least, like, okay to good Ocean's 12 and 13 are. And it was really tough the first, I'd say, like 30 minutes getting into, because the pacing was a little slow. And then the last 20 minutes was such a stumble, I thought. Like, it was just like, what the fuck is going on, with a lot of shoehorned in stuff. And it was just very, very frustrating. And just didn't feel, at the end of the day, Ocean's-y. Like, it didn't feel like an Ocean's movie to me. It just felt like a heist movie. And I think if you get a cast together like that, and you need to do better. Like, you just have to do better than what they did.
I kind of agree with some of what you're saying. I will say I wasn't disappointed by it just because I didn't have huge, huge expectations. We talked about it before. I think I said I'm excited for it. I'm going to go into it and I'm probably going to like it. And I did. I think I probably liked it better than Ocean's 12.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah, I think I liked it better than Ocean's 12. I don't know if I liked it more than Ocean's 13. Because I like 13 better than 12. And obviously, you're always chasing Ocean's 11, which was lightning in a bottle, as far as that's concerned, and one of Jeff's favorite movies. So I don't disagree with what you're saying, because it's your opinion, man. But I wasn't disappointed. It just it was what it was. It's a fun movie they drop in June, and it's worth seeing, and it's got a good cast. It could have been more, though. I think it could have been more.
Yeah, I liked it more than 12, not more than 13. So right now we're at an average score of 69. That would mean it's officially buttered. But guess what? We also have to factor in the listeners. Their score, 65 out of 100. It's officially not buttered.
Ooh.
This is one of the closest we've had. This is missing the mark by just a hair. It's a touch off.
So close, it's so far. Do you think it deserves to be buttered?
What do you mean?
Like, if you could say objectively, do you think it deserves to be buttered, like, as a movie? I think it probably does. But
it probably does, but that's not the system.
Yeah, it's not the system. Yeah.
It's not the system.
We abide by the laws, the bylaws.
I butter it, personally.
Yeah. I did too. Kenjack missed it by one, but close enough where it's like, you know, okay, a little butter. So that is our non-spoiler review. We're going to get into some of the stuff we really didn't like. We'll have a time code here for spoilers.
To avoid spoilers for Ocean's 8, skip to 49:29.
Okay, spoilers. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Already mentioned the script. Script's a problem. But let's dive into more of the heist stuff. First off, I want to say the cameos. Fucking loved them. Loved Ruben. Loved that cameo. Great cameo. Loved the amazing Yen. When he popped up, I was real pumped. I knew he was coming right when they showed that the trapeze school in Chelsea Pier area. I'm like, well, that's got to be the amazing Yen. It's not going to be Carl Reiner on the trapeze. Bummed out to hear Matt Damon and Carl Reiner got cut. Wanted to see their cameos, Linus and Saul. But, you know. Two's good. Two's enough. I got a little clap. Little clap for me. No one else clapped. Just me. But, you know, it was enough. It was enough for me to clap. Let's talk about some of the bigger stuff, though. The heist. The heist, outside of the script. The heist just, as you said, Trill, I don't know. There was just something about it. You just don't really feel into the heist. It was shot well. I mean, for me, the movie felt like a dollar store Steven Soderbergh heist movie. Like, they tried to make it seem like it was Steven Soderbergh. They tried to give the camera shots, the music, the pacing, but it just felt off. Like, it just didn't feel like it had the charm. And I don't know if it was because of the heist, because Ocean's 12, part of the thing was the whole heist or whatever it was stunk. I mean, that was a big reason why the movie didn't hit. But this one, the stakes, man, I don't know. Like, it just didn't feel like it worked. Like, you're like, there's something missing.
When you talk about the stakes, let me go back to the heist thing real quick. One thing I did not like about the general feeling of the heist is, as a viewer, I felt like most of the characters were contained within the same 800 square feet. I felt like most of the heist took place in that dining room or the bathroom. And that's where, like, a lot of the scenes shot. And of course, you had people as support off there, but it felt really small and contained. And I don't know if I liked that. I compared to Oceans, you had a big casino, you had vaults, you had all that stuff. Compared to Logan Lucky, you know, big racetrack that took them a lot to get there. With this one, it felt small by comparison. So, you know, not anything to do with any of the actors. It just was like the heist itself. And then the stakes, I feel like to have a good heist movie, most of the time you have to have a villain or an entity that deserves to be heisted.
Hmm.
For me to really like it, to feel like this heist is good, it has to be going against somebody who is like Andy Garcia's character, who maybe as a viewer, I'm okay with having this guy's money stolen. Here, you got the Met Gala, and then you had a villain or a person they used as a villain to make you feel good about it, but it didn't really, it wasn't enough of a character to be an entity in this movie. So that was what was missing for me in terms of talking about the stakes. It just felt small, and then you didn't have anything they were going up against that made you feel like they were really burning somebody. That was one of the big joys of Ocean's 11, was him realizing they took all that money. You know, you don't really get that.
Yeah, the guy in it too, like, he was like a criminal, yeah, but so was she. So, like, it felt like a zero sum. Like, I didn't connect with that, like, just hatred that she had for him because, like, he ratted her out. So, I don't know. It just didn't connect for me whatsoever.
Yeah, the villain stunk.
Yeah, it was awful.
Continue, though.
I think I totally echo what you were saying. It's just, it didn't feel at all like an actual Ocean's movie. It felt like, and this is what I said about it, it's a terrible line, but in the movie in which they're trying to replace like a gem with an imitation, this felt like an imitation Ocean's movie. It didn't feel like an actual Ocean's movie to me, which is very frustrating. Maybe too much of a qualifier to put on it because that's like a really high standard, but it just didn't feel right. And it didn't feel cohesive the way they staged it, I felt. So like the whole beginning section where they're recruiting all everybody in the crew, I felt like that lasted way too long. The heist itself, I thought, was just maybe too short. I don't know if that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the heist felt too short. And I think the other thing is, one of the charms with Ocean, I keep saying fucking charm. One of the best parts of Ocean's 11 is that with the heist, you're seeing little bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Like you're seeing, okay, there's Rusty, his part. Okay, there's Danny and Linus. Okay, you see the pinch. This one, it felt like you were seeing the whole heist. And obviously you don't see the fact that the Amazing Yen stole the diamonds, like the other diamonds in the Met. But like, again, you just felt like you saw the main crux. You saw the whole thing. Not to mention, you knew from the marketing Anne Hathaway was in on it. You knew her character was in on it. So when they revealed that she was, you know, clued in on the end, like, that's not, like, you ruin the surprise. It's not a reveal. Exactly. Like, that's one of your big reveals, and really one of the two big reveals. That's not a reveal anymore because we knew she was part of the eight. So, I mean, they really fumbled that. But, yeah, the heist, many problems with that, and again it helps. It starts with the villain. Like, a good villain would have helped it along a little bit, but like, I mean, the motives weren't there. Like, I mean, I got it. Yes, I understood her art dealer ex. She wants revenge in some way. Man, that sounds familiar. Oh yeah, because Danny Ocean wanted revenge on the person dating his ex-wife, who was also an art dealer. Like, that, we'll get into that in a second. I'm copying Ocean's 11. But it was too familiar, and they just didn't flesh it out. Like, there was a couple scenes really quick, and they wanted you to believe or understand, like, who this villain is. Like, they actually introduced a villain. She goes up and threatens him at some sort of art thing in the beginning. You're like, who the fuck is that? Like, who's this guy? They explained Terry Benedict pretty well in the beginning, and you understand it. They drop clues. They explain who it is. Ruben says, those are Terry Benedict's casinos, and you understand what the motive is. This one, there's just no motive. Like, there is a motive, but, like, you're not explained it well enough to understand and connect with the motive. You're like, okay. Like, I guess. Like, she got double-crossed. But, like, you just don't, you don't have an emotional connection to it, like, you know, where you may have with Terry Benedict, because you don't like the guy, because they build him up as such a piece of shit.
Yeah. I mean, for an audience member in a heist movie, you have to feel good about, if the characters are good guys and they're painted as such, you have to feel good about them taking the money. So they have to give you a foil or a reason to root for somebody losing all their money. And here, yeah, they framed the art dealer, but they stole a bunch of stuff from the Met Gala.
Yeah, which is fucked up. Like, in like, it wasn't like he was stealing gambled away money, like sin money. It was just like jewels from like donated from the fucking royal family or something. That's like not good at all. Do you think it would have been better if they just cut out the like half an hour they dedicated to shoehorning in Corden and just use that time to set up the villain?
Well, let me get one more point, and then we'll get to Corden in two more points. We got to talk about the Corden B plot,
yeah, please.
Oh my god! But yeah, that's my thing, because like obviously they steal money. They steal money in Ocean's 11, okay? And I know Terry Bennett's a shitty person, but they're still stealing money. But they have you hate him enough where you can justify rooting for them. Where this one, like, you just don't hate the guy enough. Like, I just don't, like, I don't, it doesn't even out. Doesn't even out for
me. But is it his money?
No.
See? So it's somebody else. It's like, they're framing the crime on him, but the people who they're stealing from is a neutral party.
Exactly.
So maybe you're rooting for it because, like, you don't care, but I feel like you got to have that bad guy who is getting the stuff taken from them. So as a viewer, like, morally, you're like, you know, these people deserve to walk away $50 million.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right, we'll move on from that. Oh, do you hear that music? That means one thing. It's time for the PFT Commenter Movie Minute.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Cinema Minute. It's me, your host, Marty Bart. I went out to go see Ocean's 8 with my three daughters last weekend, and let me tell you, I love the picture. The movie is a true throwback to yesteryear, in the old storied Hollywood days when you could go to the cinema without having to worry about all these creeps with their iTunes movie passes skipping to the front of the line. Folks, the only app I need when I'm going tonight at the cinema is a shrimp cocktail. Swipe right. Yeah, maybe if I've got a runny nose. The original movie pass, folks, it was called a nickel. My three daughters and I all agreed no texting during this picture. And folks, if you think it's hard getting your daughters to put their cell phones down for 2 hours, try getting them to wear a chastity belt. The acting was wonderful, and I think this Rihanna lady might have a future in the entertainment industry. The Met Gala. Folks, when I was growing up, all I needed for a Met Gala was a tray of cocaine and Lenny Dykstra's cell phone number. Folks, when I heard this movie was about a necklace heist, I thought it was about Danny DeVito stealing something. Speaking of necklace, I'm very unhappy in my marriage. Speaking of necklace heist, I heard that George Lucas is trying to steal back the Star Wars pictures. Anywho, I give this movie 8 out of the 14 thumbs up on the scale of me, my three daughters, and their boyfriends, who, by the way, have substantially larger thumbs than yours truly. This has been Marty Bart, and that was the Cinema Minute.
All right, thanks to PFT for the first of what I assume will be many movie minutes. The other thing I want to get to is how much of a copy this felt, or like an imitation or an attempted imitation of Ocean's 11. And the scene where it really clicked for me, well, the beginning, she's in a jail trying to get out on parole, which, like, I understood. That was like an homage, I thought. Like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then when Cate Blanchett's character figures out that Debbie Ocean is trying to get revenge on her ex, she takes her outside or walks outside and says, "Tell me this isn't about whoever, like, I'm out." Mm-hmm. That's literally a copy from Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
When Rusty takes Danny outside and says, "Tell me it's not about her or I'm out." You know, Tess doesn't split 11 ways. And that's where I was like, wait a second. They're really trying to fucking copy this here.
Yeah.
And it was too much of a copy. Like, I mean, the formula is kind of the same. Logan Lucky's formula was basically the same as an Ocean's movie, which is fine, but it all had its different elements to it, had a uniqueness. This felt like in too many places they were just trying to literally reboot in the same exact way Ocean's 11. And that bothered me. You know, like, a cast like this doesn't deserve that. And I don't want to get into the whole, you know, the whole female feminism thing, which people argued about over Ghostbusters. But people are trying to compare these two. Don't compare these two. Ghostbusters stunk top to bottom. Great actresses. They were not great performances. Paul Feig, too much improv. Like, there wasn't anything really great with that movie. This movie, the acting is pretty damn good. Even Rihanna was pretty good. Who, like, people have been like, is she even good? She was in Valerian. She was in Battleship. Good performance from Rihanna. The cast did a great job. But again, everything else stunk, and that's such a disservice to such a great cast. How do you pull all those actresses together and don't give them that great of a product to work with? That's the bummer. Like, don't reboot and retread it. Do something unique. You have a formula. Use the formula with something unique. Don't use the formula for something you've already done. Yeah, it was a bummer.
I don't know. I mean, how could you say it stunk when you gave it a 69?
Or I didn't mean stunk, like, but the idea stinks.
Yeah.
Okay, let me rephrase. The idea stinks to reboot, and that's what makes me so mad, because they were great, and the movie looked fine, but like the other end of the spectrum wasn't great. Like, that's my issue. Like, half of it was great, half of it was not great at all, and that's where it evens out to me. It evens out at about a 69, 70.
Got it.
I think that they really just... They should have. Hold on, I just completely lost my train
of thought.
I'm more
mad online. I'm just more mad online because, like, it could have been better. Like, and when I calm down, I even out to it. But like that stinks to me. Like, don't reboot it like that. That's a waste. You're wasting getting all these actresses together.
I think if you're going to do something as unique as making entirely female cast, like you said, you just need to do better. Like, you need to do better if you're getting that cast together and doing something which is already inherently unique. You can't fuck up like
that. Yeah, it's not even and you agree with this too, I'm sure. Not even about the female cast. If they had done this with the Ocean's 11 cast, I'd say the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how do you fuck that up? That's a bummer. It's a whole thing. It's just a bummer. It's one of those things that should be better than it is. It's not bad. Again, I'm mad online, so I sound like I hate it more than I really do. But, like, it's just, you know, it's just kind of bummed out. Let's talk about one more thing. James Corden.
Fuck him.
No, okay.
I'm saying it.
No.
I'm saying I'm sick of his movies. I'm sick and tired of him. Sick of him.
He felt very shoehorned into this movie. And I actually didn't think he was terrible. He was kind of like, he was a little bit funny in a few moments. Like, he was a little witty. But it just, the B plot. Ken Jack, you and I have talked about it a lot. The B plot with James Corden, it felt like it really wedged in between the heist and the cool reveal. Like, it just totally threw the movie off. Would you agree with that, Trill? Like, it just kind of took the movie off its tracks for a little bit.
In general, I felt like there was too much time in the movie post heist.
Yeah, way too much.
And that was partly filled by James Corden. I didn't think he was terrible, but I didn't think his character served any purpose. I think you could have easily cut him out and not have even added a new character to the movie and added some other device to get from, you know, point Y to point Z.
Cut him out and then develop the guy, Claude, whatever, more, like the actual villain, so that we actually hate him. They gave him like 2 seconds of screen time to give you a reason to hate him, and it wasn't enough. It was just him being selfish and ratting her out. And instead, we get him as a fucking James Corden as an insurance adjuster in like the 20 minutes between the cooldown period.
Let me tell you what I liked about this movie, though, because I did give it a 70, and I feel like you guys are being awfully negative for something that we rated highly. But again, we've always said it's easier to pick out what we didn't like than what we did like.
And I'm really disappointed. And I'm just yes. I think that's the thing. I'm just disappointed. That's my big mood.
Let me frame it for you. Your Ocean's 11 is like in your top two movies of all time.
It's my favorite movie.
So you're a huge Ocean stan. So, you know, for them to have an Ocean's movie and it not live up to the standards of what you're used to in Ocean's 11, I get that. And I would argue a little bit that the sequels weren't good either, and you're probably disappointed at that. But I thought Anne Hathaway was great. She was easily my favorite part of this movie.
Easy, yeah.
I loved her character. Her character was kind of like a parody of what people think, like, maybe Anne Hathaway is like.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like really subtle, and that's not an original thought. I read that from a think piece last week, but I really thought her character was funny and, you know, very charming in her own way, and maybe kind of an anti-hero in some senses. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it. I thought she was the bright spot of the movie. I thought a lot of the other characters were great as well. I don't think there was a single bad performance. I don't even think James Corden was bad. I just thought he was unnecessary. But going back to the negatives, with a great cast like you're saying, Jeff, I don't feel like we got a whole lot of meaningful interaction between the characters.
Mm. Yeah,
either.
Totally fair. There's no chemistry. The script doesn't allow for the chemistry, which is what is so great about Ocean's 11. They all play off each other in certain ways, and they're able to establish that in a pretty short time period. It's like 2 hours. They're able to establish chemistry and relationships that you understand, like Danny with Linus or Rusty with Linus, Danny and Rusty, and then like all of them with Saul and Reuben. It's just there's little subtle nuances that make it work, and this one they don't allow it to breathe, I think.
What did you think of Anne Hathaway's motives for joining the team? I thought it stunk. Like, she's just like, oh, I don't have girlfriends, so I'm just going to join your heist of multi-million dollars, even though I'm a high-profile actress. I thought that was so stupid.
Yeah, I think that plays in the story. It's not awful, but I don't think it's awful, but it's not great.
It's so silly, right?
I thought it was in line with her character, though.
Is she like clinically insane? Because like only an actual insane person would do that. Like if you're a successful, like very famous actress and like you're like, okay, I'm just going to join a heist, which would easily land me in jail for a very long time just because I don't have friends.
I don't know. I mean, I just got the sense that like with the Dakota Fanning plot, you know, she was at a point where she felt like her career was like she was trying to keep up or something like
that. Man,
that
kind of disappeared too.
Yeah.
The Dakota Fanning plot kind of just like went by the wayside. I just thought about that.
So, I mean, I guess they're saying like, maybe like for me, it was in line with their character because her character did seem like someone who might be inconsistent and might just turn on a dime or something like that. Maybe a better explanation would be like, I'm just bored with acting, or even saying like, I want to get out of acting and I just want to fund my own movie, which is what they did at the end when they did the montage.
We should talk about that.
You didn't like the montage.
Oh, no.
No, I'll wrap up the last Anne Hathaway thoughts. And I hate being like, oh, I know how to make the movie better. But, like, I would have liked if she'd have been on the inside. Like, I like that she noticed the pictures being taken. Like, that's cool. Like, she's smart, even though she kind of comes off as, you know, like a diva prima donna who is just kind of aloof and just knows how to, you know, be an actress.
Yeah.
But I would have liked maybe if she had been in the bathroom throwing up and then she's like that was her ploy or her trick. Like, she was in on that or something. I don't know. And then she becomes a part of it mid-heist. Like, that would have surprised me more than the ends, because I'm like, well, she's a... Because when it's over, I'm like, well, she's coming back somehow, because I've seen it in the fucking poster outside the theater. The big stand-up staring at me when I walked in has Anne Hathaway.
As the eighth member.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can kind of agree with both extremes with what you guys are saying. But, yeah, okay, last thing. The montage at the end. Ocean's 11. What is one of the most iconic scenes from Ocean's 11? Iconic, said it.
Claire de Lune.
It's Claire de Lune and them standing in front of the Bellagio fountains. And it's sentimental. And that's where you can really be like, oh, damn, this is cool. Like you know, they're soaking it up. The montage at the end, it's like this futuristic montage. They're riding a subway and you get to see what they're going to do with all their money. And it's just like, wow, man. It's like it's a fucking cornball fest. Just like the cheesiest montage possible. People in chat was definitely in front of a green screen.
Driving
for her.
That PCH.
Yeah, it's like, ugh.
It was like the scene from what do you call it? The Italian Job. It was that exact scene.
Cringe work.
Oh, I hated it.
It felt very out of place.
I don't know, guys. I'm like, we have the same scores, but it's like the points that we're dinging from the movie aren't corresponding to what we didn't like.
I know, but still, like, a 69 is not that great. Like, I mean, it's not that great.
69 is never great.
No, it's not great, but I think, like, that's fine. I just, like, what I didn't like, and I'll say it, is when they open up the fridge and you just saw the jewels and it was, like, $100-whatever million, like, as a viewer, I want you to steal something that is visibly more impressive than a fridge full of jewels. Like, so that's all I'm asking out of a heist. Like we said, I want someone to root against in order to feel good about this theft that's occurring. And I also want to see like a big, big payday. And like jewels, obviously diamonds are very small, relatively speaking, and can be worth a lot of money. And so you just don't get that. So, I mean, maybe people didn't feel that way, but I just never felt like it had this huge expansive stake in it. And maybe by design, because the budget for this movie was $15 million less than Ocean's 11, and Ocean's 11, that was their 2001 budget. It was 85 to 75 million. So, you know, maybe the three additional Oceans member made up that $15 million difference. I don't know. Obviously, you know, George Clooney and all these other people in there, and you can have a big acting budget. But it's not like they didn't spend any money that the actresses here, because you got a huge amount of big names. You know, Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Rihanna, so on and so forth. So I love the cast. I don't know if I really hated the script all that much, but for me, it was just the payoff of sitting through a heist didn't feel as big as it could have been, and that's just not what I like.
Yeah.
Now, you compare it to Logan Lucky, where the stakes never, like, from the get-go, I mean, they're robbing a motor speedway, right? So, like, you're thinking, like, the Met Gala, how many millions of whatever you got there, and then Logan Lucky, they just rob a big cash vault. So, like, they set my expectations in the right place. Like, I felt like there was going to be a twist, but it just turned out to be more jewels.
Yeah.
But I'm like, whatever.
They should have just showed Cartier's like CFO getting fired because they lost $150 million asset, and he has to go home and like tell his family, yeah, I got fired because these assholes stole something from me, even though nobody hates me whatsoever because they didn't set up a proper antagonist for the movie.
The final thoughts here, I think we all didn't hate it. We enjoyed it a little bit, but we saw flaws. Again, I think I'm more mad online about this. I'll say it again. I'm just disappointed. I thought the great was great, and I thought the bad was bad. Like, and there was really just two big extremes there. So I got my score 69 for myself, 68 from Ken Jack Trill, 70 listeners, 65 officially not buttered. We're going to have a quick break here. We're going to do one of our countdowns for our favorite skits since the inception of Lights, Camera, Pod / Barstool back in August, September? I figure when our first show was. So we'll have that on the other side of the break. Heist movie team draft or team building, whatever you want to call it. We'll be right back.
My name is Megatron, I am Megatron, and I'm here to kill robots. My name is Megatron, and I like to drink Diet Pepsi all day. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. My name is Megatron. Tron, Tron.
All right, we're back. We're building our own movie character heist teams. So 8 positions, 9 people, though, because there's one, like, 2 brothers or sibling spot. And we're going to build them. It's not a draft, technically, because we can have repeats, but I don't think we're going to have many repeats. The leader, the number 2 guy, the old guy, the young guy, 2 brothers / siblings, explosives, the grease man, and then electronics. Ken Jack, myself, Trill, and then the listeners. That's the order. Ken Jack, you're up first, using just movie characters, not actresses or actors, movie characters. Who is your leader?
My leader is Captain Miller from Saving Private Ryan. I think he has a lot of experience leading men through tough situations. He's a teacher, so he can be patient, even though there's some people who are maybe more arrogant, like in the Ocean's movies. And I think his planning phases during Saving Private Ryan were very Ocean's-y. Like when they assault the MG nest, he lays out the entire plan for them. And when they do the final battle for the bridge, they do a whole planning sequence, which I thought was very, it's good enough to translate over to Ocean's.
Yeah, all right. Captain Miller, Saving Private Ryan. My pick, number 1, a leader of men. He's been in prison, so he knows the stakes of having to go up against going to jail. Paul Crewe from The Longest Yard. Paul Crewe, he can sling the old pigskin around. Not sure if that does anything for a heist team, but he's a leader of men, so Paul Crewe is my pick. Trill Ballins, who's your leader?
My leader is Mark Watney from The Martian. This dude is an astronaut and a genius. He took his own poop and made potatoes out of them. And not only that I can trust him to get out of a jam and plan very well to survive on Mars for how many years. He also worked with a team in order to get himself back.
That's true, yeah. Good point.
Via delayed signal.
And hexadecimals.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And disco music. Okay, yeah. So Mark Watney, played by Matt Damon, from The Martian. Listeners, number 1 pick. This was the big-time vote for this leader. Benjamin Gates, National Treasure. Which, I mean, National Treasure is basically a heist movie.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot.
So he has those heisty skills. Ben Gates, Nick Cage, National Treasure. Ken Jack, the listeners, by the way, pretty good picks. I will say, some of my favorite picks yet from them. Ken Jack, who's your number 2 guy?
My number 2 pick is Victor Navorsky from The Terminal, played by Tom Hanks. He's a contractor, jazz enthusiast, and he's a war hero or war criminal, depending on who you talk to. I think he's just the perfect guy to back you up.
Okay, The Terminal. Victor Navorsky?
Yeah.
Did I say it again? Okay, Terminal. My number 2? This is a guy that knows Vegas. That's very important because my movie is set in Vegas. It's Paul Blart from Paul Blart Mall Cop.
I was in Vegas. I didn't know.
Yeah, the second one was in Vegas. He was the Wynn Casino was very, very up front and center in that movie. It was basically bankrolled by Steve Wynn. So yeah, Paul Blart, problematic, by the way, right?
Got to bleep that name out.
Yeah, got to bleep out Steve Wynn. Paul Blart from Paul Blart Mall Cop. He's not like a true leader. You know, he is in the movies, but he needs a little help. A bit of a loose cannon. Not quite the con man like Rusty. is in Ocean's 11. But Paul Blart, on the segue, I feel like that'd be pretty good, pretty successful. So he's my number two guy. Trill Ballins, who's your number two guy?
My number two guy is Robert McCall from The Equalizer. He's played by Denzel Washington. The Equalizer, okay film, but Robert McCall is a mild-mannered ex-CIA operative who works at a home goods store, or I guess a Home Depot-like store. And I feel like that temperament's good for this team because he can keep cool, but he also has the skills and background to really get dirty if need be.
All right, listeners, their number two guy from Austin Powers, number two.
It's very
simple. I got a little chuckle out of me when they picked number two from Austin Powers.
Wait, the Rob Lowe number two or the other number two? I don't even know his name.
I'd leave it up for your imagination. So listeners go number two from Austin Powers for the number two guy. That's very creative. That was a lot of votes for number two. So lots of galaxy brain thoughts out there. Old guy, Ken Jack. Who's the old guy of your crew?
My old guy is Chesley Sully Sullenberger from the movie Sully, played by Tom Hanks. I think he's just the perfect guy to run a con because of his ability to get all his ducks in a row, and he can react in emergency situations, and he can act like he's actually an important person. Mm. So, going Sully.
Got a bit of a theme going here, I think.
Maybe.
Got a bit of a theme for Ken Jack's team. My old guy from Jack and Jill, Al Pacino. Papacino was in Ocean's 13, so he knows heist movies well. This is the actual Al Pacino, too, because in Jack and Jill, he plays himself. So Dunkachino himself, Papacino, he is my old guy. All right, Trill Ballins, who's your old guy pick for your heist team?
My old guy is Alfred, specifically the Michael Caine Alfred.
Mm.
Because I like Michael Caine. But I also feel like Alfred is very wise and very calm and knows a lot about the world and can advise on the heist.
Yeah, he probably can, and he has some Batman equipment I'm sure he can give out.
What about Michael Caine and Harry? That'd be a good one, too.
In my list, nobody can use their superpowers or equipment. It's just based off their characterization alone.
True. Okay. Listeners, the old guy, the old bed pooper himself, Grandpa Joe. So
we gave him the alley-oop there.
Is that the diversion? He just shits, like,
Oh, no. And, like, all the guards run over.
In the middle of the Bellagio.
It's like, do you have any insure in the bar area? And everybody else sneaks by him.
Oh, Grandpa Joe. Ken Jack, young guy. I have a prediction. I'm not going to say it, though.
Take a guess. I'm curious.
I would say it'll be Forrest Gump.
No, it is Josh from Big, played by Tom Hanks. And not much to say here other than he's just an expert at playing a young man when he's actually older. So
should have known that.
Going Josh.
My young guy, Julian from Big Daddy. That was my only real option.
Which twin?
Who's the Sprouse who didn't post his dick on the internet?
Dylan?
Yeah, whichever one didn't post the dick pics. Got to be smarter than that. Got to be smarter than that. Yeah, Julian. He could have been my grease man. Little small guy, but no, he's the young one. He's going to learn.
Little small guy. Did you see the dick pic?
No. Okay.
It was all right.
I didn't. Trill Ballins, who's your young cat?
My young guy is Ferris Bueller, because everybody knows Ferris Bueller is a future con man.
It's true.
That's very true.
Gets away with a lot.
Yeah.
He uses fake aliases like Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago.
Yeah, that's...
Steals his friend's dad's Ferrari.
It's a great pick. He is a heist man.
Yeah. Emotionally torments his friend. Cameron.
Yeah.
Don't forget.
This is a people don't forget. This is a good pick. Good pick, Trill. Listeners.
Wears a shitty vest.
Listeners. Young guy. Ken Jack hates his character. Baby from Baby Driver. Though good for a heist team. He's a good getaway guy.
Yeah, I guess that's a good call.
It's a good getaway guy. Here we go. The two brothers, Ken Jack, or siblings.
Okay, so for mine, I never saw these movies because I'm not a nerd, but Tom Hanks' role in The Da Vinci Code and his role in Inferno, because they seem like they're basically the same person.
Huh. Checks out.
Yeah. Wonder what the theme is here. So that's your pick from The Da Vinci Code. Two brothers, two siblings. I'm going with Jack and Jill from Jack and Jill.
It's perfect. That was probably the first one you thought of in this casting table, wasn't
it? Oh, for sure. Jack and Jill was a top pick for the listeners, too, but wasn't their number one selection. Jack and Jill, that's what I've been saying, two siblings. They get along, kind of. Jill also knows jiu-jitsu, and karate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Which is unexpected. I know Al Pacino is going to be a little attracted to her. That could cause a rift in the team because he's really attracted to her in Jack and Jill. So, yeah, that's my pick, Jack and Jill. All right, the brothers or siblings, Trill?
I'm going with Bobby, Jack, Angel, and Jeremiah Mercer, the four brothers from the movie Four Brothers. Oh, you guys only picked two siblings? That's cute. I got double the amount.
So you've got Watney's 10 then, because you got two extra characters, not Watney's 8.
I do, and these guys are out for revenge. They got, you know, they're trying to avenge their mother and four brothers, so I feel like if somebody has wronged Watney's team and they're trying to take the money from them, they'll be in. They'll be committed.
Wow. All right, I like that pick. Listeners, two brothers or two siblings? Dale and Brennan from Step Brothers. Though I will note, out of the few hundred votes for Dale and Brennan, about 40 people called him Brendan.
Really?
Yeah, let's come on. Let's sharpen up our Step Brothers skills. Come on. All right, explosives. Ken Jack, who are you picking?
I'm going Charlie Wilson from Charlie Wilson's War, played by Tom Hanks. He just has a lot of expertise in explosives. He sold $3.2 billion of explosives to the Taliban. So I think he's just a good pick for an explosives man.
Yeah, that works. It makes complete sense. My pick for explosives, this was a tough one for me. I had to find one that fit. Nobody is quite as explosive with the language and on the golf course as Happy Gilmore. So Happy Gilmore is my pick. I'm not really sure how it's going to work out. But that big driver, bit long off the tee, explosive on the on the range, on the course, in the PGA Tour. So I got to pick Happy Gilmore. Trill Bowens, explosives.
Okay, so now I'm switching over to my comedic list because I've seen you guys are not taking this exercise very seriously. So let me flip the
page.
Wait,
do you want to redo all your other ones real quick?
Nope. I'll get into it. My explosives is John Carter of Mars, because who else would you want leading your explosives team than the character responsible for one of the biggest bombs?
I want to hear the rest of the fucking comedic team now.
Oh, God.
Nope. Release the comedic team.
Listeners picked Rocket from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, damn, it's a great pick.
Which does make sense. Ken Jack, excuse me, Grease Man, the old slippery guy trying to get through all the cracks and crevices.
I'm going Forrest Gump from the movie Forrest Gump, played by Tom Hanks. I have no idea how flexible Gump is, but he went from like track star to war hero to fishing mogul to running icon. So, you know, like anything's possible. He's also one for one on pregnancies he caused after he bust down Jenny's Janis Joplin cheeks to smithereens. So, you know, he's got a range of motion. Wish everyone could see Trill's reaction. He's in pain.
It's funny. We did this commentary on Batman and Robin. You got to see it. And there's a couple jokes Ken Jack got off that Trill would have audibly groaned at and been like, all right, cut that out. There's a couple of things he said. If you haven't seen the Batman and Robin, please watch it. I'm not just tooting my own horn. Everyone else is fucking hilarious in it. The moment where Bruce Wayne is leaning over Alfred's bed, Ken Jack says, cook him on, Bruce. I need that sloppy or something like that.
I need
that
sloppy toppy, Bruce.
And then Tyler, old Trill Withers, says, come on, Bruce, one last nut. And
I fucking cried laughing.
I was on the train watching that back from Philadelphia the other day, and I had to hold in a really big laugh. I was losing it.
Oh, that's so
very
funny.
My Grease Man, slimy bastard, Deuce Bigalow.
Oh, gross.
Deuce Bigalow, the male and or European gigolo. Drew Ballins, the Grease Man.
My Grease Man, Stuart Little.
Why is that so funny?
Not only can he get into the hard-to-reach areas, he can also fit the whole team in his tiny-ass Miata, mouse Miata convertible to make a break for it.
Folks, we have our first repeat. The listeners for their Grease Man pick Stuart Little. I'm not even kidding. That was the number one pick, Stuart Little.
It's a good Grease Man.
Oh, Lip Nicky. Good boy.
Did he ever get to drive the car?
If you forgot that, one of our listeners, when Jonathan Lip Nicky replied to one of our tweets, asked, Jonathan Lip Nicky, did you ever get to drive the mouse's car? That's the best tweet ever from one of our listeners.
Oh, dude, I was crying laughing when I read that. Because he's like, yeah, Lipnicki was so serious. He's like, yeah, that picture of me is from like 10 years ago. And he's like, did you ever drive the car?
Yeah, you can drive the car, kid. Just don't look in the trunk.
Oh, my God. All right. Electronics, last pick. Round it out.
I'm going with Paul Edgecombe from The Green Mile, played by Tom Hanks. Edgecombe literally means blue ball searching, so I think he'd be great at hacking the World Wide Web. He's also controlled life and death through the medium of electricity. So I think, who better would you want as a hacker and a guy working with electronics?
It's a good pick. I'm going to put you on the spot. Where is the heist take place? It's obviously it's the Tom Hanks heist. You picked all Tom Hanks characters.
I mean, Nazi Germany, it has to be, right? We're searching for Hitler's gold.
Okay. Or the watch that killed Hitler. Mine's set in Vegas. It's the Happy Madison heist. Obviously, if you couldn't tell by now, I picked all Happy Madison movies. You got Kevin James in there. You have, I almost called him Carl Reiner. You have, who plays Deuce Bigelow? I always forget
Rob
names.
Schneider.
Rob Schneider. You have Al Pacino. You have Adam Sandler.
What if, you know, what's that movie Miracle at St. Anna where they're searching for the Nazi art?
Yeah, they also do that with.
And George Clooney's in it, right?
No, that's Men Who Stare at Goats. No, that's
no,
a different.
No, that's totally a different movie.
Different movie.
It's
the LSD
no,
one.
No, it's something men. It's Monuments.
Monuments Men. Yeah, Monuments Men. Yeah, so maybe that's where mine can be in the universe of.
Yeah, okay. So I pick Mark Zuckerberg for my electronics. You got to have a good hacker. Trill Bond's electronics. Who are you picking?
I'm picking the character known for one of the most iconic hacking scenes of all time in cinema history is Roy Ten Cup McAvoy. Was that not funny? I got a lot of laughs for the first two joke ones.
Wait, what was...
Okay, well, go, no, now you guys are laughing. No, now they're not laughing. I'm going to go back to my serious list. For electronics, I pick Lisbeth Salander, a.k.a. Salander, a.k.a. the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Hmm. Wow, yeah. Solid one. We wouldn't go Artemis from Ready Player One?
That ended up being funny because thinking about you going, oh, that girl from the dragon tattoo.
Also... my explosives team, the John Spartan from Demolition Man has joined on as well.
Ooh, yeah.
Because so the movie's name is Demolition Man.
So you're up to a full 11 now, Mark Watney. Did you have a joke leader, or are you just not going to reveal that list?
My my
I need to hear this so bad. What is it?
My grease man is Mario from Super Mario Brothers.
Oh my fucking!
Because he's known to go down those pipes.
Give us the rest.
I didn't really fully flesh that one out. My brothers are Mario and Luigi.
Give us the leader.
I don't have a leader for that one. Wait, hold on. Let me go back to my other notes. Right back. Nope, notes are done. I was trying to think of a good joke for Mario as the grease man, because I figured because he's so large, he had to grease the pipes somehow to go down them.
Well,
but
the backup grease man was actually a joke for the listeners. It was Jordan Belfort, and I think that's because he's greasy and his hair. I don't know.
Good question. I don't think they understood what grease man was.
Oh no, for sure. Most of the grease men.
Grease man.
It's a guy who can like slip through the cracks and crevices.
Yeah, like the acrobat.
Yeah, but I had to look it up, and there's also a grease man definition on Urban Dictionary that defines it as somebody who can make stuff happen. Like somebody who's maybe well connected and pay people, like thinking of like greasing people like in
Pat
terms
Riley.
Of bribes.
Yeah. Solid grease man. Electronics for the listeners. It was Shuri from Black Panther. The Winklevoss twins and Mark Zuckerberg were also in there, but Steve Jobs was the number two pick for the listeners. Actually, no, you know what? I'm making it Steve Jobs. I'm sorry. I'm overriding that.
No Jimmy Neutron?
No, I guess not. Guess no Jimmy.
Brain blast.
So those are the teams, the heist teams. Good laugh. That's it. That's it for this week's episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool. We'll be back on Sunday. We'll do listener questions. All right, so listener questions on Sunday. Back to our old me's. And then we'll probably get some old reviews coming up soon. Don't know yet. And then next week we're going to review Incredibles. Incredibles 2.
We can do the Reddit bit on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll do the Reddit bit on Sunday. Send us some Reddits that you want us to read. Some funny Reddits, but not like comedy Reddits. Not like they're supposed to be funny. Like really like shitty TV shows. Like a, I don't know, like a Joey Tribbiani like subreddit. Just like just weird Reddits. Send them to us. Yeah. Tweet them at us.
Nothing super weird. Yeah. Just like something that somebody would have posted on 7 years ago, and now only the dedicated few are still posting on it.
Yeah, send us those. We'll review Incredibles 2 next week. Maybe we'll do a rankings, like a Pixar ranking. We've already done Disney Pixar. Maybe we'll do like worst animated movies or something.
Yeah.
That could be. Maybe we'll
try a new segment.
Yeah, we'll scan the Reddit. There's some good segment suggestions. We'll scan the Reddit. We'll look for a segment, but to be determined. And maybe PFT Commenter will be back for the old movie minute. Maybe it's a recurring segment. That's really it. That's all we got. Any last words, Ken Jack and Trill Ballins?
I'm exhausted, guys. Not going to lie.
You do look tired.
This wasn't one of my better episodes.
Nah,
I'm sorry. Apologize. I feel like it's hard to beat the Sunday episodes in terms of energy because I get nice 8 hours of rest.
Sunday's episode is so
not
funny.
Anymore. Not to toot our own horn, but you know, it was kind of
the blacklist segment. No joke, was probably some of the hardest we've all laughed like together. I fell over laughing. Like I had to kind of move away from the microphone because I didn't want to blow out the levels. Was pretty good. Reminder to listen to our Batman and Robin commentary. We're doing another commentary next week, actually. That's the last thing I'll say. With Tyler, when he's here for the NBA draft, and Coley, and Devlin. Find a really bad movie on Netflix. Tweet us a really bad movie. Don't tweet us a good movie. No one wants to hear a commentary on a good movie. We're not fucking directors here. Give us a bad movie on Netflix that you can stream along with the commentary. We promise we'll do stuff that's available on streaming services. That's it. For Ken Jack and Trill Ballins, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Sunday.